are Locked On Flyers, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Flyers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Flyers podcast for Wednesday, March 3rd. Your daily dose of Flyers news, analysis, and high-quality content. That could say I was not expecting that Flyers team to show up last night. Not at all.
Yeah. We got to talk about what's going on here.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about it. And, you know, if you want to join in on the misery, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Locked On Flyers. We will keep you up to date on all of the Flyers news, everything that's going on in practice and in games. And, you know, when they have a stinker, we can commiserate together. You can also email us at lockedonflyers@gmail.com. We are your hosts. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Rachel.
And today we are going to recap last night's game against the Penguins and then jump into our mailbag. Locked On Flyers is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you are listening. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss out on any of our episodes here on the Locked On Sports Network. So before we jump into the game, let's get into some pregame notes. So last night's game for the Penguins, they had fans in the arena, and the Flyers are looking to do so as well. The Wells Fargo Center announced that fans will be back at Flyers games starting on Sunday, which is a game against the Capitals. Charlie O'Connor said about around 3,100 fans will be able to attend Sunday's game, and it's going to be Inside Edge and Premium Seat members based on tenure who will get the first crack at tickets, and then all other fans can sign up for our priorities list. And then if more tickets become available, then fans from that list will be chosen randomly. So if you were thinking about coming to a game, keep a lookout for that. Then we saw that AV said that Konechny will play, and he replaced Nick Aubé-Kubel. You know, when asked about that, AV said that he thinks that Aubé-Kubel has been playing well and it was a tough call, but Konechny is one of their top players, so he feels like, obviously, if Konechny's good to go, then someone has to come out, and unfortunately, it was NAK. What did you think about that, Rachel,
before I go on? Yeah, I mean, I know why he did it, and there is a logic to it in terms of NAK being the one to come out, just because of wanting to keep Nolan Patrick on the wing for at least one more game, because he had been, you know, kind of improving his game and getting more involved in plays and shooting more and all of that. So just giving Nolan Patrick that one more shot at least on the wing means that they had to keep Bunneman in at center for 4C, and it was just NAK got the short straw. That being said, against a team like Pittsburgh, I thought it would have been really great to have him in because he's so good on the forecheck, and especially he'd been really coming back into his own this season in terms of having his kind of game with that strong forecheck and being a little bit more aggressive. So I think it really could have helped the Flyers having him in, but I absolutely do understand the logic behind what AV did.
Absolutely. Erik Gustafsson was scratched for the second game in a row, and keeping up with like scratching of the defense, which we'll touch on later in the episode, Charlie O'Connor actually specifically asked AV about Myers, which we've talked about in yesterday's episode, and AV said that he didn't really think that Myers' game was totally off, but there were a couple of areas he wanted him to reset. Also noted that the 6 games and 9 night schedule were a reason why he was cycling guys in and out. But Myers did play last night. So just interesting to see AV's, you know, his mindset on scratching players on the defense and at forward. It came out a little bit earlier before the game that Sidney Crosby would not play. He's been put on NHL COVID protocol, as well as Todd Reirden, the defensive coach, I believe, for the Penguins. He was also put on COVID protocol. And then, honestly, for me, the biggest surprise was that Mark Friedman makes his way into the lineup, and they loaned P.O. Joseph back to the taxi squad. I was not expecting that.
I mean,
like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, poor Rachel.
I know. We talked about it kind of as a joke, and then it actually happened. And I was like, this is Ron Hextall torturing me specifically. Yeah. This is what's happening here, and I just have to accept it. And then, of course, he had a, you know, he didn't have a ton of minutes, but pretty solid game, gets an assist, whatever. Ugh. Hate it. Hate it.
Yeah, that was tough. So moving on to the lines from last night. At the start of the game, we saw JVR, Couturier, Farabee line put together. That Giroux, Hayes, Patrick line. Lindblom, Lawton, and Voracek. And then TK, Bunneman, and Raffel. And for defensive pairings, we saw Provorov, Ghost, Sanheim, Braun, and Haig and Myers. And of course, Carter Hart started. So the first period, Rachel, to me, was just surprisingly uneventful. The Flyers got two power plays back to back in the first period and were unable to convert on them. You know, maybe I was feeling like pretty optimistic in the beginning of the game. I thought that the movement on the power play looked good. It was just unfortunate they weren't able to convert. But as the night went on, my opinion on the power play soured very quickly.
Yeah, you're right about that first period. I mean, it wasn't the most exciting hockey you'll ever see, but I thought it was pretty evenly matched between the two teams, and each team kind of had their moments, you know, and the power play, to your point, didn't look awful. It just didn't convert, so I didn't think that it was going to be that bad over the course of the game, but yeah, the other thing that did happen in the first period was that it seemed like the officiating was a little uneven in this game. And not that the Pens were, you know, being favored by the refs in any way. It's just that they weren't calling some stuff that was seemed obvious just because it felt like they couldn't give the Flyers too many power plays in a row. Not that they would have done anything with it. But, you know, in the first period, there was a definite trip that they missed, and I felt like they should have gotten another power play there.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I definitely agree with the fact that the Flyers probably wouldn't have converted on that power play if they got it. I mean, this game was just so surprising because it was surprising in a way that I shouldn't have been surprised, because everything that we talked about, like the Pens special teams not being great, you know, them being without Sidney Crosby, the lack of depth in their on their team, that all just like conveniently disappeared, I feel like, against the Flyers. And you know, they were able to pot in a power play goal, and their penalty kill, I don't know, would you say that you felt like it was more their penalty kill was disrupting the Flyers, or the Flyers just could convert?
I think, you know, it was a little bit of both, but more on the side of the Flyers not being able to convert. I think that, you know, if you look at the game overall, the Flyers had more shots this game than any other game so far this season, above 40 for the first time. They just weren't a lot of high danger chances. And I think that's where, you know, the Flyers' decision making on the power play came in, and that, you know, they had a few really good ones, but most of the chances they had were easily turned away either by a Pens defenseman or by Jerry.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. Just wrapping up with the first period, I just thought that was such a huge missed opportunity because, you know, letting the Penguins feel themselves out in this game was probably the worst thing that you could do, because you needed to jump on them fast and you needed to make it hard on Jari. And the Penguins being a depleted team, the Flyers getting back TK in this game, I mean, the original lines that they started off with have more than likely been playing together. You just really needed to jump on that. And unfortunately, they weren't able to do it. We did see in the second period, Farabee get on the board, and it was a beautiful passing play with Coots. You know, I've seen someone say that line, is it that that line has so much chemistry, or is it just individually all those guys are just playing really well? And I thought that was really interesting. I feel like I'm leaning towards the individually all three guys are just playing really well. I would say that I think that JVR and Farabee have some chemistry going. But I mean, if your two wingers are having good chemistry and then your center is Sean Couturier, no surprise that they were able to convert for the Flyers.
Yeah, I'm going to say why not both? I think that they are individually all playing well. They're all in the right spot, but that allows their chemistry to flourish because you get some really good passing plays, really good anticipation. I think Couturier is just on point with knowing where his wingers are at any given moment, and that is what's leading to the success of the line overall.
Yeah. And honestly, in the second period, that was probably the highlight for me, was that Farabee goal, because it kind of went all downhill from there. But before we talk about it, I mean, just to try to get some positivity in this episode, I have to say what helped me get through that game was the fact that I missed dinner because I had to do a couple things for work, and I was able to eat Built Bar for my meal last night, and it was just so good. It hit the spot, even though I was so frustrated and like kind of hangry at the Flyers. Built Bars are the perfect substitute if you are short on time like I was. They're a soft protein bar that tastes so delicious, and they have so many different flavors. I'm partial to the caramel brownie, but I actually ran out of those last night, so I had the lemon almond cheesecake, and they are delicious.
Oh, that one is so good. I always have that when I don't have carrot cake laying around, so totally get that. But the best part is that they're healthy. They're great if you're looking to lose or maintain weight while you have that delicious treat. And you know, we keep saying how amazing they are, but they're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber, which just so good. And if you're on a diet like keto, this will fit right in.
So go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON20. You'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON20 for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. We're covering everything you need to know about the Flyers, but what about the rest of sports? Now, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered with Locked On Today, hosted by Peter Bukowski. It's got all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. So subscribe to Locked On Today podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, Rachel, so let's quickly wrap up the second period. Right after Farabee scored to put the Flyers up, the Penguins came right back off of a pretty bad turnover by Gosses Bear, which Kapanen was able to tie it up for the Pens. And just overall, this period was just a horrible period for the Flyers. Like we talked about the first, which was kind of lackluster itself, they were able to at least hold the Penguins to 5 shots. But in this period, they allowed 14. And I mean, yeah, you could say that the Pens had some power plays, but it felt like the Flyers just weren't as dominant as we've seen them, especially after a back-to-back wins against the Sabres.
Yeah, and this is, you know, where the big difference between a team like the Sabres and the Pens come into play as far as the Flyers' defensive play goes. Because, man, like a couple of bad turnovers by Ghost did not look great. Provy was definitely not having his best game. You know, Haig, there wasn't anything like awful in the second period for him, but it definitely was not helping the cause either. And there were just so many breakdowns.
There really were. And when we talked to Anthony about the Sabres game, you know, one thing that kind of just annoyed me in those games is that obviously the Flyers came out with a win, but there were times when they gave the Sabres opportunities, and whatever's going on with the Sabres, they just weren't able to convert them. And here we just saw last night, that's exactly what the Penguins were able to do. And once this got going, they kind of just were able to completely get to their game in the second period and take the lead. And so in the third period, it was nothing but the Flyers just chasing the game. And that was finally where you were able to see some urgency in the team. I did think that their play improved, But at this point, I think the Penguins were so used to playing with the lead, they were able to shut down any type of traction that the Flyers were able to get. I mean, Farabee was able to pot another goal in, and they put them put the Pengs only up by one. But then the Penguins were able to come right back with a Cody Ceci goal. And like, when Cody Ceci scores, I was just like, okay, well, that's it. Like, it truly felt like they weren't going to win this game. And then the Matheson goal, which I felt so bad for Carter Hart, because how many times have you seen other goalies do that and it not turn on them like this? And the fact that it happened to Carter,
it was not his fault.
It wasn't his fault. And it just makes me sick to my stomach, because that's going to be another thing that people talk about.
Yeah, it's just, that was a mess. And like, the Flyers can't even pull the goalie right at the end of this game. And,
no.
You know, and it sucks, because I feel like Carter Hart made a lot of really good saves in this game overall.
Yes.
And to just kind of get held to, like, blown coverage by the defense and then just a messed up goalie pull, I certainly hope. And I haven't seen a ton of criticism on his shoulders as of yet, but I sincerely hope that the criticism goes where it deserves, with the defensive play and maybe some coaching decisions.
Yeah, I feel like as Flyers fans are more attuned to like the defensive breakdowns, but outside media, I just feel like has been harping on Carter Hart, and I feel like this is just another thing that they can try to throw in his face. But I agree with you that, you know, I didn't think that he like, this game definitely wasn't on Hart. I mean, in the second period, he had an amazing stop on Kapanen, which he would have potted his third goal of the game. And, you know, there were so many stops that, you know, you really thought that Hart was keeping the Flyers in the game, and until it just, like you said, just became a mess and it kind of all fell apart. So besides that stop on Kapanen with Hart, the two goals by Joel Farabee, were there any moments that, like, positive moments that stood out to you?
Ooh, not really. I mean, it's hard.
Same, I was trying to think.
It's hard. Now, I will say that just from a coaching perspective, there was one thing that AV did right toward the end of the game, and that was moving Konechny up to the second line partway through the third period with Drew and Hayes. I think that, you know, while, again, he didn't score in this game, coming back off COVID, he was, like, out there trying to make plays, trying to get things mm-hmm. happening, and I think he deserved to get moved up in the lineup, especially when they were down. So that's something good, I guess.
No, I definitely agree with you. And it's so funny because I have on Natural Hashtag all of the line combinations that AV used, and he was mixing it up a ton to try to get the Flyers going. But I agree with you that that was a really that was a good move that you wanted to see him make, because that line with Drew and Hayes and Konechny were able to get some traction. Unfortunately, they weren't able to convert, like you said. So two things that I thought to improve upon for Thursday were just defensive decisions. I mean, that one where they Provy and Ghost just lost the net front coverage, and the Pens were able to convert in a goal. And then special teams, like I said before, 0-for-5 on the power play, which just was so surprising, because I felt like the power play was kind of trying to turn a corner, and to just go 0-for-5, and especially when it could have been, they could have had more power plays, and just to not convert on any of them was pretty glaring in a game where that could have turned the tide for you. Were there anything that you that maybe stuck out to you for improving on?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the two key things, right? I will say on the power play, there were a couple of things. One, obviously, Ghost, I wouldn't say this was like a full backslide for him. I thought he had some good moments in the game as well, especially when he was on the power play. I thought he did a good job, you know, for the most part. But I also think that it was noticeable that they tried Travis Sanheim up on the point as the lone defenseman later in the game. And it's just becoming more and more clear that Ivan Provorov is just not a power play guy. And I've been asking myself the question, like, can your number one forward be a guy, or number one defenseman be a guy that doesn't do the power play? And, you know, I just don't know if that's a thing that exists with any level of frequency in the NHL, but it definitely shows the weakness there and also makes the scratching of Gustavsson a little bit more of a head scratcher, because they really needed to keep this power play going. And if AV was talking about, you know, healthy scratching people as part of a rotation through this stretch of games, it's odd to scratch the same guy two games in a row. And I really think he could have helped in this case. How much? I'm not sure, because Erik Gustavsson is not the defenseman to end all defensemen. We know that. I'm not kind of overplaying my hand here in terms of his overall play. But I think on the power play specifically, I don't know, maybe he could have helped there a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, especially about the scratching, but also about Provorov. I mean, for me, I just feel like your number one defenseman does whatever you need him to do. So, you know, if you preferably, like I prefer to have Provorov play a ton 5-on-5 and on the penalty kill and have someone else step up for the power play. But, you know, with the way that Provorov's career is going, I don't know if he'll ever be acknowledged by the league as like a number one defenseman, because it seems like they need to have that be that power play one producer. So I think that's a really interesting point. But, you know, getting back on hand, I definitely hope that we do see Gustavsson in the lineup on Thursday just for maybe helping out that power play. But last night's game wasn't just the Flyers. There were a ton of games on, and so it's good to see so many games on for the NHL, just knowing that the games are all in full swing. And so you have plenty of time to decide what bets you're thinking of making before they drop the puck each night. And our favorite place to go is to our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action.
Yeah, football is in our rearview mirrors, but so many other sports are happening right now. We've got the NBA, college basketball, and baseball is in spring training, so we'll get those games happening soon. So much to choose from. BetOnline even covers awards. We just had the Golden Globes. They've got TV shows and reality TV, which is amazing, especially if you watch The Bachelor like we do. You can get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine.
And BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Every Wednesday on Locked On NHL, take a deep dive into the Western Conference with Sarah Avampato of Locked On Kings and Tom Gazzola of Locked On Oilers. Whether it's a look at the top-end contenders like Vegas and Colorado, or breaking down the rebuilds of the Kings and the Blackhawks, Locked On NHL has you covered on Western Conference Wednesdays. Subscribe to Locked On NHL wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Rachel, so let's just move on from this game. We have a few mailbag questions, and the first one kind of piggybacks off what we were just talking about. So this season, AV has been healthy scratching players, first Myers, now Gus for two games, yet we haven't seen Robert Haig take a seat. What is it about Haig that you think AV likes so much that he insists on playing him over a Myers or a Gustavsson?
You know, I think that, I mean, I agree with myself from the last segment in terms of if you're going to scratch people in rotation, make it a true rotation. So it seems to make some sense here. I think that they just see Robert Haig as a defensive defenseman, and all the other guys seem to jump in the play more often. And so maybe he just feels like he needs one of those guys in the lineup every night. And that's the best explanation I can come up with. I don't know that it's a good one, but that's the one I've got, I think, right now.
Yeah, you know, that I think that makes the most sense. Honestly, I'm still trying to wrap my head around why Haig is in the lineup. I mean, I just don't get it. I mean, and I've always been this way about Robert Haig. I will say that the games against the Sabres, he didn't look horrible. And I believe he like assisted on a goal on Sunday. So I can understand maybe that was kind of like in AV's mind on why he should stay in the lineup. But I just felt like those two players, specifically Myers and Gustafson, you know, they add to your team more than I think a Haig does. So to me, it would be a no-brainer to have him sit for a game or a couple. But we'll see. It's still a baffling situation that he is consistent in the lineup. Okay, next question. With the way that JVR has been playing this season, do you feel like the Flyers should protect him in the Seattle draft?
I mean, it should definitely be in the conversation to think about it. You know, I think that we were kind of assuming that some other guys would play a lot better than mm-hmm. than they did. So we'll have to see, you know, how things turn out towards the end of the season. But, you know, I think this is certainly sustainable play from JVR. And especially, you know, when he's on such a good line, like we talked about earlier, it's definitely worth considering for sure. And I think that, you know, obviously Voracek is somebody to be exposed given the, you know, the salary hit he has. But yeah, there's some other guys that we may have to think about leaving out there.
Yeah, I think I'm of the same mindset. I think like now is the time to have this conversation. I think for myself, I don't know if I believe that this, the way that JVR is playing right now is actually sustainable for him. It just seems to me that it came out of nowhere. And I know that we've talked about it a ton that he wasn't playing bad last season, but he wasn't playing this good either. So to me, I'm still on the fence, but I do think that it's important to have these conversation and to start the conversation, because if we finish the season and he is consistent this whole season, I think that it's a definite possibility to start looking at other options to expose. All right. So with how good Max Wohlman has been so far in his AHL career, do you think that he's jumped any of the Flyers' current prospects in your eyes?
Oof, that's a good one. I think that he has. There's a couple for sure. I think, you know, we talked about in yesterday's show, there's now a contract spot open, and maybe it's worth looking at him in terms of giving him a two-way deal or an NHL contract. But, you know, we do have to remember that in this AHL season, the competition is a little bit different across the board just because so many of the top AHL players are on teams' taxi squads right now. And so mm-hmm. we have to take that into consideration in terms of how we evaluate this AHL season. Now, that being said, he's far exceeding expectations, doing amazingly well for the Phantoms. And, I do think there's at least a couple of guys that he has passed. Now, I hate to say this just because there's injuries there, but Isaac Ratcliffe, you know, we just don't have information enough to know if Ratcliffe is gonna pan out yet. I think that he's probably surpassed German Rubsov, who's on loan in Europe. I think that, I mean, obviously Pascal Laberge, he's way better than him. And, you know, Laberge has an ELC. Matt Strome has an ELC. So there are a number of guys who have, you know, official NHL contracts that he's better than. But, you know, as far as is his current level of play the real deal, I don't know the answer to that yet.
Yeah. You know, when answering this question, I was going to say, you know, originally that I think it's hard to compare Wohlman to some of the prospects in my eyes, because they're not at the same level that he's at. Like, so I'm thinking of the guys that are in college or the guys that, you know, came over from college that haven't really consistently played yet. And so it was just hard to compare him with them just because it's, you know, they're not in the same position. But then you brought up a couple of guys that, you know, he is in the same position with, and I do think that he's jumped them. And it's so funny because I really don't like LaBarge and Strome. They're not even on my list of prospects that, you know, keep an eye out for the NHL just because they have such a long way to go. And it was always a question mark. I'm thinking of Strome specifically of if he would even play in the NHL. But I do think that's a good point. I think, like, you know, after thinking about that, yeah, Willman has jumped a couple of prospects in my eyes. You know, I'm hoping that he can continue this streak that he's on so that he can get a contract. All right, last question. Claude Julien was one of the first coaches fired this season. Who else do you think should be on the hot seat right now?
You know, it's tempting to go with, you know, like Ottawa and Detroit, but like they were supposed to be bad this year. So I don't understand why you like necessarily would want to target them for firing.
Yeah.
Right. Like the expectations are low. I would say until very, very recently, David Quinn would have been on my list for the Rangers. I think that, you know, they're starting to maybe turn it around a little bit and have some better play. So he may be, you know, saving his skin right now, but we'll see how this season turns out. But yeah, Quinn has not overall been doing a great job this season thus far.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think for myself, I'd have to say Buffalo with Ralph Krueger. He is just at a point where it's just baffling some of the lineup decisions he's making. And now I don't know if he will get fired, but I definitely think he should be on the hot seat because this team has gotten worse since he has been the coach, and they brought in some pieces that they shouldn't be. So he's definitely one that I'd watch out for. And I also think Vancouver, Travis Green. Now, I could see him in a situation that's similar to Montreal where the GM is kind of just firing the coach because of kind of the bad decisions that he made. Not necessarily like it's coaching decisions, but it's just some of the contracts that were signed, where they are in their, you know, rebuild, quote unquote rebuild. So those would be two that I think are close to getting the axe. But
yeah, the Canucks are not doing anywhere near as well as you would have expected this season.
Not at all. And it's so upsetting because I like the Canucks. Yeah. And I was excited because they weren't in the Flyers division. So I was like, I can truly root for them.
Yeah, but it's been a lot of like feast or famine with the Canucks this season, and more of the famine than the feast.
Exactly. All right, so wrapping up with our Flyers fun thing, I had one that was, you know, I originally was going to say Pittsburgh giving a standing ovation to Oscar Lindblom in a TV timeout. It was pretty nice to see. But then again, like the way that the game worked out, you know, we're going to acknowledge that. But the Flyers fun thing is going to be Farabee's first goal, which was a nice tic-tac-toe with him and Couturier. So I thought that was a nice way to end the episode instead of like hats off to the Pens for being, you know, sweet and acknowledging Oscar coming back. Because they beat us, so yeah. We don't really want to acknowledge them right now.
No, I approve of that change.
All right. Hopefully you guys approve of it too. Thank you guys so much for listening to today's show. We'll be back again tomorrow to do another deep dive into what the Flyers need to do to get back on track against the Penguins on Thursday with Taylor Hosh, who covers the Penguins for DK Sports. As a reminder, we always want to hear from you. We have weekly mailbags, so send in your questions via Twitter at LockedOnFlyers or LockedOnFlyers@gmail.com. I'm Danielle, and you can find me on Twitter at Danielle_Nick. That's Danielle_NICC.
And I'm Rachel. I'm on Twitter at RMiriam. That's RMiriam.
Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.